Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only. Devour the Podcast. Devour the Podcast. Devour the Podcast.
Hello and welcome everybody to episode 40 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host David, along with me is Jamie.
Woo, episode 40. Hi everyone.
And joining us for his 10th episode is Bo.
Hey, konnichiwa.
Woo, 10 episodes.
Yes, indeed. So
I love round
two. Yeah, where's my present? I understood there would be a present.
I'm right here.
Oh, the gift that keeps
on
giving.
No. As often as you'll let me, but I'm sorry, I did not keep the receipt, so there are no returns.
So this week we're going to be covering Chud and the Spanish version of Dracula for our feature. So let's go ahead and kick things off with what did we watch this week? Who wants to go first?
Sorry, I'll go first.
Do it.
I actually, you know what I did? I made a list.
Oh.
So everyone who's been teasing me about not making lists, and there has been some of that, you can all suck it because I made one. However, I didn't really watch a lot this week.
That's okay.
But I did write it down. I watched this weekend. I gorged myself on Rambos. Rambo 1-3. I still have to watch the new one, but I don't own that one, so I couldn't watch it yet. But as for Mike's doing a new show, a non-horror show coming up, and there are going to be four guys and me discussing all the Rambo films. So in that episode, I named it Rambo Cocky. So that should be
That's
fun.
Pretty good.
Thank you. That should be really fun. I'm looking forward to it because I really do like those movies. Well, I really like the first one. But
1, 2, and 4 are all good.
No, I like 2 as well. 3, yeah. Wow.
4 is badass though. Anyway.
Still haven't seen it. I haven't seen it yet. I'm excited because I've heard that after 3, that one is like a breath of fresh air. So
it's bloody as hell, too. Oh, my goodness. One of the most violent movies I've ever seen.
Cool. But like I said, I didn't really watch a lot this week. I actually haven't been feeling well, so I've been not up to watching a lot. So I've been catching up on TV. So not really a whole lot to discuss.
Okay.
Bo?
Let me preface this by saying, if you can, get yourself in the Writers Guild of America. And here's why. They send you free movies come awards time.
Nice.
So I've been watching a lot of the screeners that have been coming in. None horror related, so that's kind of a bummer. But like I saw Arbitrage and Perks of Being a Wallflower. Those were the two screeners I saw. Then I watched most of Exit Humanity, which I will finish up, which is horror, and narrated by Brian Cox, so that classes the joint up quite a bit.
I am dying to see that.
What I've seen so far is pretty good. I only made it about halfway through the movie before falling asleep, but I will finish that up.
Falling asleep, not because of the movie, but because you're lame, right?
Because of biology, yes. because of the human need for rest, and no other reason. No, it was pretty good. It was going in a pretty interesting direction when unconsciousness came, when the Sandman swept away the last of the convicts. And then the movies for this week, still keeping up with Supernatural, which is, this season is just so up and down. But God, my goodness, like season 4 or 5, one or the other is so good. And then obviously Walking Dead, American Horror Story, which we will talk about on the back end of this, but that will be exciting. There was big doings.
Yes, indeed. So I actually watched quite a bit of stuff this weekend, or this week, besides the movies for the show. I watched Big Trouble in Little China, finally.
Ooh, nice.
Are you kidding?
I'd seen it in parts for years as a kid on like FX or whatever. I never actually sat down to watch the whole thing. It was something. It was very interesting in that Kurt Russell is supposed to be like the hero who doesn't actually do anything, which is kind of awesome. I love that about it. It didn't make a lot of sense in some ways, but at the same time, I was like, meh, it's an entertaining John Carpenter movie, so there's that.
No, I totally get that.
And the monologues in the Pork Chop Express giving are they're amazing, you know? Yeah. I think Kurt Russell is one of his finest performances for being so full of bravado and so ineffectual simultaneously.
Yeah, that's what I found so entertaining about it, was that he's such this, you know, big mouth badass who 9 times out of 10 in the fights gets knocked out, and the other guys are all fighting and doing stuff while he's waking up off the ground. So that was pretty great.
Yeah, the moment where they're in the elevator and they're taking the potion to, you know, make themselves stronger or invulnerable or whatever. And Kurt Russell kind of is sort of shaking himself as if getting himself into the effects of the potion. And when he says, "Yeah, I'm feeling kind of invincible right now," and then immediately is just Wayland. Yeah. It's so good. Love that movie. Yeah, anyway,
that was fun. I caught Silent Night, Deadly Night, finally. Another one I've been sitting on for a while. Surprisingly, really good.
Yeah.
Like I knew that it was a Killer Santa movie, and that was about it. Really, really good. Like, I was really impressed with it. And also one of those movies where it has a moment where it makes an obvious turn that it could have gone a completely different direction. Like, when he kills the first guy he kills, I was like, okay, you could have probably gotten off by saying, hey, he was trying to rape this girl, I was kind of drunk, and I was trying to save her, not realizing that I killed her. Instead, he goes batshit crazy and kills a bunch more people, so.
Right.
Wonderfully hilarious in that sense. Fantastic, fun, absolutely wonderful slasher. I loved it. They Live, which is another great John Carpenter movie.
Ooh, sure. Yeah.
Watching Keith David and Roddy Piper beat the shit out of each other in an alleyway for 10 minutes was...
Oh, man.
Awesome.
I mean, you know that in the South Park episode, the cripple fight, that completely... It takes that fight scene by scene. I mean, not scene, but like yeah. moment by moment and recreates it. If I didn't love the South Park boys before that episode, I did. But if I didn't, I would have just... I don't know. I would have married him. After that, because I just thought that was completely brilliant.
Yeah, that was fun.
And Roddy Piper is surprisingly not terrible in that movie.
He's not too bad.
And he's pretty good. And I just, his character is awesome. And he's just so, you know, the classic bubblegum line and so quotable. It's one of my favorites. I love it so much.
Yeah. My favorite line in the movie is when, after he first gets attuned to the glasses and starts laughing, and he says, "You know, you would have figured it'd be something like this."
And oh, yeah.
Immediate acceptance. There is almost no denial of what's happening from that character.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a good point. I think that's that says a lot about the movie. Oh, shut up. I love that you look like your face fell in the cheese dip back in 1957.
Yeah.
You were fucking ugly.
I watched The Devil Inside, which... that was a waste of my time.
Really? I still haven't seen that one either. It's in my queue, but I haven't.
It was... I don't know if it's just that I don't like exorcism movies, but this one was bad. Like, there was just nothing particularly interesting about it. It was all jump scares and loud noises. And...
Yeah.
Fucking... I don't find people doing contortionist stuff to be scary or creepy, so you need to knock that shit off, Hollywood. That's not scary.
Yeah. Unless you're crab walking down a staircase, knock it off.
Yeah, exactly. I rewatched Watchmen for the first time in like forever, and holy shit, the movie's amazing.
It really is. Like, I think that's as good an adaptation as you're going to get of that material.
Yeah, definitely. And it was one of those things, like, I hadn't watched it since I had reread the book prior to watching it the first time. So kind of sitting down to watch it again after some time had passed, I was like, oh, wow, this is really good. There's stuff in it that I can complain about, but at the same time, I'm like, it's stuff that's like deliberately done to deconstruct the superhero movie. That's why he's doing these certain things that would.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't be annoyed because it's on purpose and it's actually for a reason.
Well, and it gets Rorschach and Dr. Manhattan right, which is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Those characters are tough, and it nails both. And Jackie R. Haley deserves a lot of credit for that.
I love him as Rorschach. Love it.
I mean, and I don't have any issue with any of the other characters. I mean, the comedian comes off as good as the comedian's going to come off. Dreiberg, meh. He did a good job with the part. Sally.
Yeah, that's the weak link.
She is, but she still does a good job with what they did with it. You know, again, it's one of those things that, like, stepping away from the comic, it was like, all right, this is pretty good for what this is. Watched Adventureland because it was available on Netflix instant, and I wanted to watch it yesterday because I felt sick.
Actually, there was something else that you started to watch yesterday, and then it was Masters of the
I got about 15 minutes into that one, I had to turn it off.
I don't blame you.
I couldn't. I don't know. Guns and swords, and it was not Masters of the Universe, and Frank Langella is, I don't know. Maybe another time.
There was a great series of articles on Ain't It Cool News called Cannon Fodder about all the movies that Cannon Films released. And that, of course, was one of them. And it's a really unhysterical article about why that movie is as crazy as it is. And I highly encourage people to look that one up. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then last night I finally watched Cannibal Ferox, which, it was all right. It was honestly kind of boring and was just really mean-spirited. Like, it was really trying way too hard to be, it was obvious that it was trying to be better than, quote-unquote, better than Cannibal Holocaust, and it just wasn't. It's really way more mean-spirited. And they got, like, two of the actors from Cannibal Holocaust on it for, like, 10 minutes. But, yeah, it's just, I wasn't impressed, so. Good score, but not a very good movie. Yeah, that's pretty much all I watched aside from our TV selections, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay, so do we want to do Walking Dead first or American Horror Story? Because we have two weeks of Horror Story to catch up on.
Okay, let's lead with Walking Dead.
Okay. It was an alright episode this week. Wasn't super, super crazy about it.
Rick lost his fucking mind,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, he did.
It's he's about time.
He's gone over the edge.
Look, this is that? A...
Sorry.
this is a dude who took the apocalypse in stride for a long time. And I think this episode is where all that comes crashing down. And I really dug it. And my biggest complaint with the episode is that... The scene with him and in the basement room, the boiler room where Lori met her end, there are some details of that scene that I almost think you have to be informed of to appreciate it. And I'm not crazy about that. You know, the whole idea is that the zombie that he finds there has drug off and eaten Lori.
Right.
And if you look at the detail of the zombie, there's actually hair on his mouth, which I think is a great detail. But it had to be pointed out to me by the producer. And I was like, I wish that there had been a finer point on that. But I can't really complain about this episode. I think this is the episode that we kind of needed to get to where the series is going. Mm-hmm. And this season has been as bleak as the comics, and I know we've talked about that recently, but it really is sort of embracing the nihilism of this world, and that I love. You know, I think this is one of the most starkly depressing series of television that has ever run, and I am all for that. I think that is absolutely fantastic. And the idea that Lori had to be cut open to deliver a baby then has to be shot in the head by her son so she doesn't come back, and then is consumed by a zombie who we find bloated in the same basement, is one of the, like, that blows my mind that that is on television.
Oh, I agree completely. And I love the fact that Rick just goes fucking nuts on this zombie. And he's like, he's making these faces. Like, he looks, do you guys know Reefer Madness?
Yeah.
Okay. You know Ralph, the blonde guy that's like the older guy that's always there. He hangs out. There's this one scene where it's just like face. Like, these are, you know, really wild, crazy faces that he's making, which, by the way, was apparently very popular in the 30s, because I'll get to that later when we talk when we talk about Dracula.
But yeah, certainly a recurring theme.
But that's kind of what Rick reminded me of, because it was just like, I mean, he's just like covered in blood, and he's just like, he's batshit crazy. I mean, he is gone. And I thought that was great. I mean, I really think that the what his character and he as an actor have been doing this season is just way, it's just beyond what I could ask from a TV actor. You know, I mean, he's really throwing it out there. You know, from rolling on the ground to just going freaking nuts. I think he's really putting everything he has into it, and it shows.
Yeah.
And it kind of, it pulls me in. You know, I'm in there with him, you know, and I'm digging it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first two seasons of this show, but this third season, I'm almost in awe of how, you know, to quote myself again, just starkly depressing the show is, and how there's no quarter. I mean, everyone, not only is everyone potentially, you know, zombie lunch at some point in the series, but the emotional turns that these characters are starting to take now, you know, are just brutal. And once again, oh my goodness, Michonne's katana scene.
Oh, that, nice.
That was just made of badass.
Sorry.
And I like the fact that she fucked off, you know? That she basically told Andrea, like, hey, this place is no good. I'm telling you, while we've got this door open, we need to go. And Andrea, you know, gives her the Heisman. And Michonne is like, okay, well, you know, peace. I'm about.
Well, you know, she's in the end, you have to look out for yourself, you know. And if you feel like whomever you're with is making a decision that is a silly one, and you have to do what you got to do. I'm glad she did it. You know,
I think it's consistent with the character for sure.
Definitely.
Absolutely. So.
Yeah, she'll have a couple more zombies carrying her luggage in no time.
All right. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for Walking Dead, I think. So we got, like I said, we got 2 weeks of American Horror Story to get caught up on now. So, last week was the introduction of, the character who claimed to be Anne Frank, and the suggestion that the James Cromwell's doctor was actually a Nazi.
Oh, I loved that episode. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was. And then this week we had a lot happen where we find out that she wasn't Anne Frank, but she kind of became obsessed with it. James Cromwell may very well still be a Nazi, though. Sister Jude is possibly being thrown out as the head of the asylum. Sister Mary is going crazy still. And the big reveal is that Dr. Thresden is actually Bloody Face.
Yeah, yeah, that was a nice little turn. Makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And there's that great bit of foreshadowing when they the guard comes to him and says, you know, hey, Sister Jude wants to see you. And he's like, oh, tell her I don't work here anymore. In fact, tell her I never have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a nice little moment of like, oh, he's been posing as this dude all along. So, you know, I've mentioned this to David earlier, when we start to get little hints that maybe all is not well with him, and you see the lamp made of skin and there's a nipple on it. That may be one of my favorite things ever done on American Horror Story. I thought that was genius. But yeah, no, the both episodes, I mean, it was part one and two, so talking about them together makes a sort of sense. But yeah, it, you know, the performance again by Jessica Lange, like the story she tells about her, was it a pet squirrel yeah. that she has? You know, that scene is why she's probably going to win another mm-hmm. Emmy. You know, I mean, she is so good in this show. And I know that they're writing for her because they're fans of Jessica Lange, but holy crap, man. She is. I mean, it's not just chewing scenery. It's really just inhabiting a role and being strangely vulnerable as strong as she is. And I love her character. And you know, I said this to David earlier that I thought this, the most recent episode, the second half of the I Am Anne Frank episodes, that yeah, I almost felt like it was strangely an inhalation because there wasn't new craziness introduced for once. You know, it was just like, okay, well, here's the craziness that we've been dealing with all season. We're going to put finer points on everything. And yeah, there are revelations about like Dr. Thredson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Thredson. And, but it's not like we introduced a new element of wackiness. Like, okay, we talked about the aliens. We talked about, you know, James Cromwell's experiments and him being a Nazi and, you know, Chloe Savini's all janked up because of the zombie juice or whatever. You know, all that stuff was stuff that at least had been previously introduced. So I felt like, oh, okay, well, you know, even the weirder stuff in the most recent episode, like the trap door, which I thought was a little too convenient. And then, David, what did you say was your, like, there was that moment of like, really?
Oh, the lobotomy at the very end where,
yeah.
What was it, Carol or some Catherine? Yeah. The woman who said she was Anne Frank, she gets lobotomized by Cromwell's character. And then at the end, she's shown to be totally like just sedate and normal. Like, I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, and even that stuff, I think, you know, the series has kind of earned by being so crazy. And the other thing I would say about the lobotomy, which, again, I mentioned to David offline, but the idea of her as
a lobotomized...
Why don't
you and David just do a show?
Well, if you were on time, you would have heard it the first time. But... If like the fact that the lobotomy just made her the perfect 60s housewife, I think is kind of a nice political statement. And, you know, so, yeah, I would expect that if you had a transorbital lobotomy, or at least in my experience performing them, that you get a slightly different result. But, kind of work. I mean, the whole show kind of works because there's just nothing that's too outrageous for
right.
me. You know, like if a Sasquatch broke into the asylum and abducted the Nazi doctor, I don't think that would be totally off-putting at this point.
Yeah.
It would be like, oh, Sasquatch. Well, you know, Sasquatch,
right.
Sasquatch is big in horror right now. I mean, I think we're on the verge of a Sasquatch boom. And I don't know, that would write in. So, I don't know, maybe the writers are listening. They'll pick that up. Like, ooh, Sasquatch.
I know Jesse had, listener Jesse, DPT superfan, DTP, yeah, superfan Jesse, had mentioned doing a novel about a Sasquatch, and I obviously offered the title Harry the Godless Bloody Killing Machine and the Hendersons. So I'm all for it. I like Sasquatch movies. I remember one from my youth, and if anybody listening knows the name of this movie, then please, you know, write in and let me know what it is, because I'd love to watch it again. But when I was a kid, I remember seeing a movie that was a couple of Sasquatch, maybe it's plural already. So two or three Sasquatch throwing boulders at or big rocks at a cabin where people were trapped inside. And I don't know what movie that is.
I think that was a Jack Lynx commercial.
I'm way too old for that to be true.
Don't I know it?
But I'm aging like a fine wine, ladies. Just saying. Anyway, But yeah, if anyone knows what that movie is, please let me know, because I would love to dig it up again. But I do remember that there was a time when, like, Legend of Boggy Creek and all that stuff was happening, that, you know, Sasquatch were considered a, you know, a legitimate monster, and Harry and the Hendersons fucked that up. You can't pet a little yippy dog and be a godless killing machine the next day. And that's what they are. That's what Sasquatch are. I watched Animal Planet. I know what a Sasquatch is.
Oh, right. The Animal Planet, hey, and their cryptozoology shows.
Yeah. And what was that show? Monster. Discovery Channel? It was like Monster.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I can't remember the name. But anyway, it was where they would, every week, they would, you know, look for a different monster, like Chupacabra or whatever. Monster, but they never, ever. Yes, thank you. They never found anything.
Of course not.
Like, ever. Well, on the Bigfoot.
Because it's not real.
On the big. Hey, don't be talking negative about the Chupacabra. It's out there.
This week, we're in search of the Easter Bunny.
But on the episode for Bigfoot, it was actually fairly interesting. They found, they put down a plank of nails in front of a door that of a house that they had been, this is up in Canada, so these, you know, crazy Canadians, they put this plank of nails in front of a door of this house that they thought had been in the past visited by Bigfoot, but they couldn't swear if it was Bigfoot or a bear, because whatever it was just got in and kind of tore the place up. So anyway, later they went back and they were able to retrieve some DNA from these nails. And then the DNA tests were pending, and we were supposed to find out. I never heard anything else. And I'm like, damn it. You were right there. But Monster Quest, unfortunately, I love the idea, and it had that great little monster eye graphic thing. It was a cool idea, a cool show, but they never found a damn thing. So, anyway.
Plus, a Canadian, it couldn't be a Canadian Bigfoot, because they would be far too polite to go in and wreck somebody's place.
Well, that is a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah.
Hey, so I was in your house, and things kind of got out of hand because we got into the Molsons, eh? So, just want to say sorry.
Sorry, Tilly.
You know, like in recompense, there would just be giant buckets of like freshly harvested maple syrup left on the porch. Yeah. Sorry.
Maybe it was a rogue American Bigfoot.
Like somebody in the family visiting, like, hey, why don't you come up to Saskatchewan? Listen, I gotta tell you, Jerry, we're not gonna invite you up anymore if you keep going on like this. Also, Jesse, good title for your book, Jesse the American Sasquatch.
Oh, Lord. All right.
Why are we talking about Sasquatch?
Because you brought up Monster
American
Quest. Oh, right. American Horror Story is going to have a Sasquatch. Well, that would probably explain ripped off Adam Levine's arm.
There you go.
All right.
Sorry about your arm.
All right, we'll be right back with the news.
Our show is now on Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Good evening.
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny.
Civil defense officials in Cumberland have told newsmen that murder victims show evidence of having been partially devoured.
Yeah, sure, I'll do it for $50.
Beware the moon, David.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Holy shit! She's a friend of mine!
All right, we're back, and welcome to the news. I'm going to start off this segment with some really exciting news. FX has renewed American Horror Story for a third season. FX has ordered the next book of the award-winning miniseries American Horror Story, picking up 13 hours of a new miniseries from 20th Century Fox Television. It was announced today by John Landgraf, president and general manager of FX Networks. Production of the untitled AHS will begin next summer and premiere in the fall of 2013. American Horror Story Asylum, the latest hit in the American Horror Story saga, wraps up its run on Wednesday, January 23rd at 10 p.m. Last night's episode of Asylum topped all broadcast networks in the 10 p.m. time period in delivery of adults 18 to 34.
Wow.
Women 18 to 34 and men 18 to 34. With American Horror Story Asylum, Ryan and Brad have raised the bar in every way, from Murder House, the first American Horror Story miniseries. And that original idea, the notion of doing an anthological series of miniseries within a with a repertory cast, has proven groundbreaking, wildly successful, and will prove to be trendsetting. We can't wait to see what deviously brilliant ideas they come up with for their third miniseries.
Sasquatch. American Horror Story Sasquatch. AHSS.
I like it. Co-creators, executive producers Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk have not announced the new title or story for the next incarnation of the American Horror Story franchise. As was the case with American Horror Story and American Horror Story Asylum, many of the actors will return in different roles next year, including star Jessica Lange, who won Golden Globe, Screen Actors Guild, and Emmy Awards for her portrayal of Constance Langdon in American Horror Story. Starring as Sister Jude in AHS Asylum, Lange will be moving to the lead actress category in the Golden Globe and Emmy Awards this year. Oh, good for her. She's gonna knock it out.
Yeah.
The American Horror Story Anthology is a labor of love for all of us, and we could not be prouder of the work our brilliant company of actors and everyone on the production team is doing this year, said Murphy. To John and our friends at FX and Dana Walden and Gary Newman at 20th, we thank you for your vote of confidence, and to our loyal audience, keep watching. Don't worry, we will. Everyone is loving the show this season, and I think that every fan will be super excited that it's, you know, they can already go ahead and set their DVRs for next time.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's kind of a genius premise, you know, like the release said, you know, you take roughly the same cast and do an entirely different story for a season. Doesn't matter what the time period is or setting or anything like that. I mean, you could do this show for 20 years and it would never be the same show. That's an incredibly good idea.
And I've said quality. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, as long as you have quality writing and, you know, they keep paying attention to detail, then it would have a following that long, I think.
Yeah. And I think that this season, they especially they struck a much better balance this season with sex and horror. Whereas last season, I was really critical of that. There was too much sex, not enough horror. This one, there's way more horror and not as much sex. The balance is much better this time. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the third season, because we already did a Haunted House. We're now dealing with an asylum with possibly aliens and other weird shit, so who knows what they're going to come up with for the next season.
You know, that too much sex, not enough horror. That's like the opposite of my life.
I had to do the math on that for a second. I am not fast.
But that's a good
transorbital lobotomy, like I said.
Okay. Next up, now we know when Godzilla starts shooting. Well, we knew that anyway. He starts shooting when he sees the whites of their eyes. That was bad. Okay, that badass giant lizard known as Godzilla is returning to theaters May 16th, 2014, under the direction of Gareth Edwards. Monsters. While little is known about the story, the design of the legendary monster, and when we'll see that marvelous teaser trailer that played to audiences Comic-Con, we do know when filming begins. According to Collider, the word is March 2013. That comes from cinematographer Seamus McGarvey, who is shooting Godzilla, and also lensed this year's The Avengers. McGarvey believes shooting begins in March and will carry through until June.
Nice.
New Gojira. Gojira!
You know, it can only be better than the Roland Emmerich travesty.
Oh, the one from 98?
Yeah. That's a bad
movie. I've never seen it.
I love Godzilla, and I have not seen that.
Plus, you know, Monsters was really good.
That's what I've heard. The Godzilla from that terrible movie actually shows up in, I want to say it's Godzilla Final Wars that came out a couple years ago. But it's because, it's like a billion, like every monster ever appears in that movie. And it's like Godzilla fighting a bunch of like all these different monsters and a team of Japanese superhero guys. I don't remember exactly what it was. I was half awake when I watched it, but it was pretty entertaining.
Isn't that kind of Son of Godzilla, though? Wasn't that the premise of that? Was Godzilla has a baby, but now there's a big battle royale with a bunch of other
monsters?
That's
the premise of every of those all of those movies, pretty much, is Godzilla fights a bunch of people.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And sometimes there are tiny twins floating around.
That's Mothra. They call Mothra.
That's right. But Gojira was there.
Sure, sure. No, nobody's arguing that.
Okay. Nicholas Brendon next up. Nicholas Brendon, Amber Chaney, joined cast of the Morningside Monster. I like Nicholas Brendon.
Sure.
Blue Dust Productions is pleased to announce that Nicholas Brendon and Amber Chaney of the Hunger Games and The Walking Dead have joined the cast of the Morningside Monster. Production begins later this month around Atlanta and Lawrenceville, Georgia. Oh, that's in my neck of the woods. We are extremely excited to add the immense talents of Nicholas and Amber to our already extraordinary cast, said writer-producer Jason Palmer. Brendon and Chaney joined previously announced stars Robert Praugo of Revolution, Tiffany Shepis of... Oh, that's... There you go, Bo.
And my girl.
Catherine Tabor of the Clone Wars. The Morningside Monster unfolds around the discovery of a brutally murdered corpse in the woods of the otherwise peaceful small town of Morningside, New Jersey. Racing against time, Sheriff Tom Halk and his deputy, Clara Austin, embark on a desperate journey to catch the killer, pitting them against friends, enemies, and even each other. Brendon will play Mark Matthews, the history teacher at the local high school. Chaney will portray his wife, Aunt Abby, a town fixture known for her strength in the face of adversity. The script is written by Palmer, directed by Chris Etheridge of the award-winning Survivor Type, and produced by Palmer, Etheridge, and Michael H. Harper. Wow, Survivor Type, that's pretty cool. That's screened here at AFFEST. When my movie screened at AFFEST, and I'm actually friends with a person, we were in the same briefly. I can't talk about that. Wait, I know very well the person who did the special effects for that movie. Sat right next to her during the screening. That's kind of
nice.
Cool. I think so. That's an interesting movie, by the way. I think it was very well done.
Yours was very good as well.
Thank you. Okay.
That's the compliment fish that just flops into the boat. You don't have to go fishing for that.
Thank you, darling. That's what I keep year round. And this is not showing up for me, David. I'm sorry. The last two stories are completely out of focus.
Okay, I can read them real quick. We have another viral image from Carrie, and
out on reporting a Carrie
story. If you ever head over to the Carrie Facebook page, there is a new picture that is available. It's and the image is of a notebook page that says "Mama says I'm a sinner," and the Facebook page asks, "Is this how Carrie would repent when Margaret locked her in the closet?" And of course, that's coming out March 15th next year. And
yay,
our final bit of news. Although, really quickly before we get into this final bit of news, a film that we covered, or that we talked about some time ago, the Cohasset Snuff film is actually going to be playing in the Bay Area in December. I'm going to try and go.
Oh, nice.
See if I can rally up a crew to go with me.
David, reading news, world doesn't make sense.
So, genre vets gather for Die Maniacs Die. So, Barbara Crampton and Nick Principe of Laid to Rest are joining the cast of Die Maniacs Die, a new film from the director of Rogue River, Jordan McClure. Newcomers Blake French, Rochelle Celia, and Joshua Raymond also star in this edgy grindhouse horror flick written by Corey Schubert and Eric LaFuente, which should be getting production in 2013. Andrea Albin and Scott Spiegel will produce through the Fatality Films banner. And the Gorefest focuses on the town of New Thetford and the hidden secrets that it keeps, including those secrets that house themselves in the form of deranged and disfigured maniacs. Years after the death of her parents, Amelia follows in their investigative footsteps, only to find herself and her team caught in horrifying traps of New Thetford's best-kept secret. Amelia, with the help of her older brother Orlando, must now find a way to make it out alive before they too become maniacs. So there you go.
I am so biased on this story. It's not funny. I know Corey, have known him for years.
Oh, it's that Corey.
Okay. Yeah. This script is insane. Like, I cannot wait to see this movie because I know how crazy it is. And obviously, can't talk about that stuff. But, if you enjoy batshit crazy 80s horror, that's what this awesome. Is. It's going to be so good. If you're not excited right now, then you need to get on the boat. This is going to be amazing. Plus Barbara Crampton. I mean, there's no getting around that. And, oh my goodness, she's going to be so good in this. So, yeah, I couldn't be more thrilled on a personal level for, my friends and all the people I know who are actually in it and working behind the scenes of it. But more importantly, as a horror fan, I cannot wait to let my eyeballs see this. It's going to be so good.
Very cool.
Awesome. And we were talking off the air about trying to get the writers and possibly Miss Crampton on the show at some point for an interview. So we will.
Somebody from that production will eventually make their way to DTP. Yes. I guarantee you somebody is going to say something about this movie on this
awesome.
Show. Miss Crampton is... She's extremely nice and approachable.
She doesn't care for you. I don't know why.
Oh, well,
No, I'm kidding.
Not everyone can love me.
Everything, she is one, I don't know her personally, of course, but, she seems to be one of just the loveliest people based on everything I've heard. So...
I've spoken to her on Twitter briefly. I mean, we haven't, we're not best friends or anything, but she responds, and very friendly. Like she's not, off-putting at all. And she's, I think she's pretty incredible. Love her.
Oh, of course. Reanimator, Castle Freak, From Beyond. She's, she's horror legend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's it for the news this week.
That's it for the news.
So we will be right back with Chud.
First, he conquered YouTube. Then, he was on Cadaver Lab. Next came Cinema Corpse. And then, he was on your mom.
What? It totally happened.
Kruger Nation Horror Podcast, www.krugernation.com.
It came from the instant queue.
Beneath the city of New York are living catacombs. An endless maze of subterranean tunnels, unfit for anything human. Unauthorized for anything experimental.
Hold it! There's something moving up ahead at the top!
And unlikely to bring anyone down there. So... they're coming up. Chud! Chud, check your basement and your bathroom. Keep off the street and try to hide. But remember, the dark is their place. The night is their time. And tomorrow, the only things living in the city of New York will be Chud. Chud. Cannibalistic. Humanoid underground dwellers. Chud. They're not staying down there anymore.
Chud was released in 1984. Synopsis is, a bizarre set of murders in New York City seems to point toward the existence of a race of mutant cannibals living under the streets. This was directed by Douglas Cheek, written by Parnell Hall, based on a story by Shepard Abbott. Starring John Hurd as George Cooper, Daniel Stern as the Reverend Shepard, Christopher Curry as Captain Bosch, Kim Geist as Lauren Daniels, Laura Meadows as Flora Bosch, and John Goodman as the Coffin Diner.
It's starring a shitload of people that you will have come to know later.
No shit.
Yeah. Oh, Hank Azaria is in it.
Really?
What's the... Yeah. He's one of the cops at the station.
Oh, shit.
And,
yeah, then there's the other cop with John Goodman. I can't remember.
Jay Sanders, I think, is his name. Or something close. But yeah. No, every time a scene comes up, you're like, oh, I know who that is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's that guy. Oh, it's so-and-so. Right. Oh, it's you. And John Goodman.
Pretty amazing.
I love him in this because he's so young.
And he's
like hitting on this, like being like hitting on this waitress and being all, I don't know. It's just, it's not like, it's not the John Goodman that you see now. And I love that.
My exact words when he came on screen was, is that John Goodman? And I ran to the IMDb page and I was like, son of a bitch, so it is.
And immediately punched the first person he encountered. It's incredible how, like, this is a movie full of actual, not only good actors, but really good performances.
Yeah, this was actually
surprisingly so.
Way better than the premise leads on. Like, I was expecting a schlocky, like, trauma-esque, shitty 80s movie, and got a surprisingly good little horror film.
Yeah, and, I even like the nice little touches that they have as far as like the costumes go for the Chud. Now, what I do find interesting is that they all look exactly the same. And, you know, in stretched reality, if you were going to be a bum that was altered by chemical waste, I don't think you'd all come out looking exactly the same. But whatever. I do love the fact that the eyes glow like they do. Mm. I've always thought that was really fun. And then there's that one scene where she slices off the head of one of them, and the head kind of rolls across the floor, and the eyes are still glowing, and then you just see them kind of dim, mm-hmm. like they just fade away. I love that. I thought that was a really cool touch.
Yeah, that whole sequence is pretty fun, actually. The extending neck of the Chud, it's kind of out of the blue, and they don't really reference it anywhere else, so it's just sort of unique to that scene, but. Mm-hmm. Still kind of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this movie is not all that well directed. And I think the biggest failing of it is that scenes kind of go on a little too long, and the pauses sometimes are a little, you know, too long between characters. And sometimes it feels like one more take would have gotten the scene right.
Mm-hmm.
All that being said, though, yeah, it is. It is definitely a movie of the time, in that sort of that ecological horror film was pretty popular. And Jamie and I kind of went back and forth a little bit about this last night, that doing a double feature of this and The Prophecy, the Talia Shire film, would be a very fitting double bill. And so there are a lot of things to really like about this movie. And it is, like, if you have this impression that Chud is a very silly movie, it kind of isn't. It's a pretty well put together little film.
Yeah, that's like I said, I was totally expecting this to be like just a ridiculous fucking like a trauma style over the top cannibalistic monster movie. And that's kind of what you get from the trailer. But then I sat down and watched it. I'm like, oh, my God, I know him. It's like, oh, it's John Hurt. What the hell are you doing in this movie? And Daniel Stern, I was like, what the fuck are you doing in this movie?
Yeah. He's really good at it.
Oh, he is. They really did take themselves very seriously. Mm-hmm. And, I think there were some genuinely scary moments here. You know, I mean, like, there's the scene where John Hurt and Daniel Stern are walking through the sewers close to the end, and they come across... Oh my God! They come across the mutilated bodies of the crew that had gone down there before, and they're looking around for the headset for the video camera, and it's still attached to the head of one of the guy that was before running the video camera. That prosthetic head is fucking brilliant. It is.
You know, amazing. I'm not. I'm not totally convinced it's prosthetic.
I wouldn't be either. I mean, I don't know how they would have, well, I guess.
I'm almost wondering if they did like a Kevin Bacon Friday the 13th deal where they have the head and he's kind of under the floor and they just do the appliance to make it look like the head is severed.
That's possible.
But if
it is really good.
Yeah, you know. If not, it's one of the best prosthetic heads I've ever seen.
Definitely. Definitely. It is so good. There's actually another scene in this movie where the special effects stick out. Oh, for one, this isn't it, but for the leg wound on Victor.
Oh, yeah.
The homeless man. Really good. When they pull off the bandage, you can't help but just go, oh, because, I mean, that is nasty looking. And I'm sorry, bandages are not going to help. They brought him some new bandages, but that's not going to cut it. But yeah, throughout. Really, I think the special effects here are good. And if you haven't, if for people who have not seen this movie, I really think, and you probably have a picture in your head of what it's going to be like, just like David was talking about earlier, I think you should put that aside and watch it. And watch it as a serious film, because, you know, I think they really did try here. And there are a couple of scenes where it's kind of, you know, over the top and whatever, but overall, it's, you know, it's definitely solid.
Yeah.
Well, in the scene you were talking about, the scene with the head with the headset on it and whatnot, the beginning of that scene is John Hurd like losing his shit, seeing all these people cut up.
Yeah.
And then like half a scene later, he's like, "Hey, come on with the headset, let's go. We gotta, you know." Let's move this along. We got some shit to record.
And, I know, and at that point, Daniel Stern's like, "I just want to get out of here, man. Can't we just get out of here?" You know,
right? And that's why I feel like there's, you know, and it may have been budget or something like that. There just wasn't a script consultant on set or whatever. But it like moments like that kind of make it not great. But it really is like this is the third time I've seen this movie, and every time I watch it, I'm kind of surprised by how good it is, because enough time goes by that I start to think like, oh yeah, fucking Chud, you know, cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers. It's, you know, kind of a silly film. And I forget that it's not. It really does contain some good performances. I think the script is really good.
I do too. I every time I feel the same way. I mean, I kind of forget how much I enjoy it and how good it is. Until I watch it. Oh, the dog. That's another example. Dead dog looked really good. Just kind of blows my mind. I mean, dude, I guess the connotation that everyone has connected with this movie, because just about everybody I know, you say Chud, they're like, ah. but the amount of care that was put into it and it really just, it surprises me every time.
Yeah, they were clearly trying to make a good movie, and that shows. And for all its failings, it works most of the time. And the character stuff is pretty good. You know, I actually did care about this relationship between John Hurt and Kim Greist. And
yeah,
you know, the only disappointment of the movie, and again, you couldn't do it because it predated the reference by several years. But it would have been great if the movie had wrapped up with Daniel Stern narrating. You know, like, me and my friends learned a lot that day as I held Captain Bosch. I realized the summer was almost over.
Yeah. All right.
And Winnie was off getting naked in front of a camera somewhere.
Yeah. Ratings.
You know, it's a very competent film. It's a good horror film. It's not a great one. 3 stars.
Okay, Jamie.
Right, solid. On Netflix, I gave it a 4, but here, because, you know, we can't really fine-tune it, I'll go 3.5. I really do like this movie. I've seen it numerous times. I enjoy it every time. I just keep forgetting how much I enjoy it, you know, and then I watch it. I'm like, oh, yeah. So, I definitely, definitely recommend it.
Okay. Yeah, I would, I gave it a 4 on Netflix. I'm going to give it a 3.5 here because it is surprisingly good. You know, I thought it was going to be kind of cheesy and silly, but it was pretty good.
You know what? You guys have changed my mind. 3.5 for me, too.
Okay.
Ah, sweet. We got to sweep across the board. And David, I'm so pleased that you you saw this and you liked it.
Yeah. And it was so surprising because I'd heard about Chud and I kind of, just from the title alone, I was like, oh, this is going to be schlocky awesome. And I was like, oh, this is actually a pretty good little movie. So
your guys have radios. My guys have flamethrowers.
Oh my God. That was the greatest. I was like, who the fuck gives the NYPD fucking flamethrowers?
In fairness though, in horror film canon, Tom freaking Atkins checks out a flamethrower in Night of the Creeps.
That's true.
Oh, did you guys notice that the meters they had were also from Ghostbusters?
No, that's awesome.
No, I didn't.
Yep, the little hand meters they had were the same spectrometers they had in Ghostbusters.
And the scene where they turn it on when Captain Bosch and AJ are down in the sewers. And they find it and turn it on.
Oh, that's
and
there's
the spike.
Geiger counter.
Yeah. I thought that was a nice little moment. Mm-hmm. This movie's got a ton of great little moments in it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know what? I want to retract my agreement with you that Prophecy would make a good double feature, as much as I love Prophecy, because you know I do. I mean, there is no better sleeping bag death in the world than that one. But... It is the
monster movie.
It is awesome. I think this and Alligator would be perfect because
we're
in the sewers in both of them. They're both ecological,
except they're both
dealing with they are. You know what? Thank you. I love Alligator so much, and I get a lot of crap for that, but that is a good movie.
That movie was about John Sayles.
And it still holds up, I think. I watched it not too long ago.
I haven't watched it in years. I should. Chud has reminded me I should watch Alligator. On that alone, it gets half a point. 3.5.
All right. So, that's it for Chud, and we'll be right back with Dracula.
Look at the size of those knockers.
A Young Frankenstein joke, really, besides mine are better.
The Inside Outcast podcast, I presume.
Yes.
From geekplanetonline.com?
That's us.
Please do describe your show for the benefit of the master of the house.
Okay. We claim to be the podcast where geek meets goth.
For 50 shows a year, we discuss a main topic. We usually pick at random, sometimes at the request of a listener.
And sometimes we take on a special guest or two.
Or provide commentary to movies, such as the Marvel superhero films.
We also feature a dark track of the week pulled from the dark underground, anything from post-punk to industrial metal.
And we even have occasional music podcasts where we play up to 10 songs.
With some discussion of the type of music, the musical artists, and the songs themselves.
But in short, we're a podcast that covers pop culture from a geeky and gothy perspective, focusing on the moments the worlds of the geek and the goth collide.
Television, films, comic books, sports, science, history, philosophy, religion, the occult, we talk about almost everything.
And we're not the only podcast on geekplanetonline.com.
That's right. There's film podcasts such as The Black Dog and Cinematic Dramatic.
Horror and cult podcasts like Hypnobob's and It's Mike and Ike's All-Star Summer Jamboree.
Television podcast, including The Babylon Project, Shake and Blake, and The Borgcast.
Then random shows such as Tangential Deviation, Irish Pubcast, and A Disappointment.
And Geek Planet Online doesn't have just podcasts. There's articles, reviews, and comic strips, too.
Very well. The master will be more than simply satisfied. Please to come in. There are refreshments in the dining area and dancing in the hall. Our resident DJ is dropping mad beats like they are hot, yo. Please to raise the roof in his presence.
Coming soon. Coming soon.
the dogs yet? Are things at school, kiddo?
What kind of cookie do you want?
I want a little man.
Did you catch anything?
You'll see. This is our project, and it's a secret.
What are we gonna do with her?
We're gonna help her. We're gonna train her, civilize her, free her from herself, from her baser instincts.
Get the rope.
Everyone, keep your distance.
Are you sure you're not overextending?
Have you ever known me to let things get out of hand?
Do you really think we should be doing this? Do we really get to keep her?
We do.
And now our feature presentation.
Dracula, or also known as the Spanish version, is was released in 1931, and this is an extremely long synopsis via IMDb. At midnight on Walpurgis night, an English clerk, Renfield, arrives at Count Dracula's castle in the Carpathian Mountains. After signing papers to take over a ruined abbey near London, Dracula drives Renfield mad and commands obedience. Renfield escorts the box count on a death ship to London. From there, the Count is introduced into the society of his neighbor, Dr. Seward, who runs an asylum. Dracula makes short work of family friend Lucia Weston, then begins his assault on Ava Seward, the doctor's daughter. A visiting expert in the occult, Van Helsing, recognizes Dracula for who he is, and there begins a battle for Ava's body and soul. This was directed by George Melford and Enrique Tovar Avalos, written by Balistar Fernandez Q, based on the novel by Bram Stoker, which is in turn also based on the play by Hamilton Dean and John Balderstone. Carlos Villares is Conde Dracula. Lupita Tovar is Ava Seward. Barry Norton is Juan Harker. Juan Harker.
And what's the actor's name again? That's almost
Barry Norton.
Yeah. Okay.
Pablo Alvarez is Oh, I'm sorry. Pablo Alvarez Rubio is Renfield. Eduardo Arozomena is Van Helsing. Jose Sorino Viosca is Dr. Seward. And Carmen Guerra is Lucia Weston. So we're not going to spoil... There's no spoiler warning for this, because if you've seen the Ghosty Dracula, it's the same fucking movie, basically, except in Spanish and way more entertaining. I really enjoyed this. There's some problems with it, no doubt. But overall, it's a much more entertaining film than the Lugosi Dracula. There's a lot more sort of movement in the camera work. It doesn't look like a film from the 1930s. Like, it feels much more like a later 40s film in the way the camera moves and everything. Some of the performances are really, really good. Like, Pablo Rubio as Renfield is fantastic.
Yeah.
Carlos Villares is good as Dracula, although some of his looks are kind of, some of the faces he pulls are kind of funny. Like, he smiles a lot, which is a little bit weird because it's not menacing at all. It's just funny. Van Helsing has some pretty funny faces too.
They all
he looks like Henry
Kissinger.
Yeah, he does.
They all have funny faces. And well, I think honestly though, I think that all of these actors at this point are silent
dead.
Film era actors. Yeah, well, yeah. Now at this point they're dead, but at that point, you know, talkies are new. So these people, I think what we can do is blame the silent film era on their facial expressions, because wow. Wow. Like, okay, the scene where he opens up the cigar case or the cigarette case and attempts to show Dracula that he has no reflection. And then he's just like, rah, rah,
his
rah,
reaction,
rah. And then he takes his cane and smashes it.
Yeah.
You know? It's great.
Oh, and there's some really fucking weird ass cuts in this movie where, like, there's one where we're introduced to Lucia and Ava, and like they're sitting there for a good like 5 seconds before Ava starts laughing, and you're like, why didn't you guys cut that a little tighter? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, and there are giant pauses in conversation
yeah.
too. You know, while you know, we have time to glare at one another. And oh my goodness, you know, halfway through this movie, I was just like, let's get this thing going. Everybody is just staring at each other in every scene. And I know that's sort of a staple of the time, I guess. But oh man, there's some rough going in this movie for sure.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of one of those things that happens when you watch these old Universal Monster movies. However, I grew up watching these. And I'd heard about this one for a long time, and I've been sitting on it for, I don't know, I've had the Legacy Edition of Dracula forever, so I had a copy of this, I just never watched it. But it was really good. I mean, there was the weird little things, like, you still have Dr. Seward, but his daughter is named Ava, and Juan Harker, but it still takes place in London. I was like, what? Why didn't you guys, like, you're clearly, like, doing these little things to change it up, but that it's still, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it feels like they should have just made it their own.
Yeah, I'm like, if they, you know? Like, if you'd put this in, like, Spain or something, it would have made more sense.
Yeah,
but they...
a castle in Madrid
yeah.
or something. I mean, that would make far more sense. But, you know, when I was watching it, I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, but at the same time, you know, there have been kind of Americanized versions of it, but they still use the same tropes of England and Transylvania, and you know, maybe that's just the story, and this is the interpretation of it. But you know, and I asked you this question as well, but it made me really wonder if there is a shelf life to horror, where after a certain period of time, in this case, over 80 years, you know, is this just not all that scary or even all that good anymore?
Well, I didn't think it was scary. I found it entertaining. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, there were some flaws with it, definitely. And at almost three, it was like 2.5 hours long, almost 3 hours, something like that. Like, I felt like, okay, can we pick up the pace a little bit? Because it's like, everyone's just now figuring out that Dracula is a vampire. Can we get on with it? But I think that from a historical standpoint, it's very interesting because it's so so different from the Lugosi version, which is very static and very stagey, whereas this one is much more vibrant and there's a lot more movement going on. Also, some really cool special effects were thrown into this, like Dracula coming out of his coffin with a puff of smoke. That was pretty awesome. And, you know, the performances were good. I mean, sure, there were the funny little bits where people were, you know, pulling weird faces. But again, you know, this is the beginnings of the talkie era. So, you know, it's the adjustment of not being a silent film anymore.
Yeah. I'm just not crazy. I guess I'm not blown away by Juan Harker for sure. Yeah.
He was wearing short pants.
Yeah, he was.
I was like, what are you doing wearing the short pants, dude?
You right. are entirely too old to be wearing them short pants. Also, but I don't know if I was the only one who noticed this, but towards the end when Ava comes back to being sort of awakened before Dracula is killed, when she's in the house and she's talking to Juan, I'm pretty sure I saw nipple in that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Like, that's, wait a minute.
That's so funny you should point that out, because I was watching it and I'm like, oh, nipple!
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm like, this is scandalous for 1931. I thought it was bad enough when she was getting undressed and she was wearing, like, the black negligee, and you could kind of see the undergarment underneath. And I was like, whoa, that's a little risque, you know. But then I saw a nipple and I was like, all right, never mind.
Well, this was also from Mexico.
That's where I perked up. Yeah. Yeah. No, as soon as I saw that, you know, I heard the opera man like, nipple, 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 nipple. I was like, yes, 1931 knew how to party. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is, if you've seen the Look, Go, See Dracula, you basically know where this movie is going and how it ends. I will say that I think the stuff on the Demeter was really good. Like, that was really cool. The sequence where Dracula's sort of coming out of the galley and he's sort of looking up at them, I'm like, oh, that's kind of creepy. And then when it lands and Renfield is laughing maniacally, like, I gotta say, Pablo Rubio's performance as Renfield was just fantastic. He was probably
he's a better Renfield than Lugosi.
He was great, but he was killing me with his just like, you know, maestro. And he was so into it was awesome.
And you know, like I said, I really like Villarreal as Dracula. I thought he was really interesting, and you know, see, some of the looks he gave was a little bit silly, because it's like, and you know, there's an introduction to the film that Lupita gives, where she talks about sort of the making of the film and how Carlos's performance is very similar to Lugosi's, although Lugosi had the longer fingers and Carlos didn't, and that's very obvious. It's like he kind of tries to do some of the same stuff, and it's just like, it doesn't quite work. Overall, I'd say I really, really enjoyed it.
Don't you think he was cast, though, just because he looked like Lugosi, or looked enough like Lugosi that it harkens back to that film?
It's possible. I mean, since they were made at the same, like, literally at the same time, they're using the exact same sets, and the Lugosi film was shooting during the day, and then the Spanish crew was coming in at night to shoot till the next morning. It's possible that's why they chose to do it that way, but...
Senor Dracula.
Conde Dracula.
Draculia.
Yeah. So.
Well, back to what Bo... I didn't chime in on what Bo said about it. I agree. No, it's not scary. No, there's nothing at all scary about it. I did enjoy it, though. I do think it was over the top. But I think there were reasons for that. And I understand it. And taking those reasons into account, I'm okay with it. I think it was enjoyable. It's obvious everyone threw everything they had into it. I mean, some people, I think, went out and rented extra. So that they could throw more into it, because wow.
Left it all on the field, coach.
And I love the eyeball cutaways. And they do this in the Lugosi one as well. You know, the close up of the eyeballs, and then, you know, close up of the eyeballs, and it's for really long, like 15 minutes at a time, you know. When Dracula will be standing there, like, there's that one scene where he's wearing a fedora.
Oh, when he's the driver, right?
Yes.
And they just keep recycling the same shot of his eyes.
Yes. And I'm like, is he really there, or are they just showing that scene?
Yeah, they were doing that. Yeah. And they reused him coming out of the coffin a couple times. I was like, you lazy motherfuckers. Cheap sons of bitches. You know, it's kind of weird that I enjoyed this one as much as I did, and I kind of wish that, like, that I wish I could get my hands on some of these other, like, I kind of wondered, did they do this for Frankenstein? Did they do this for Bride of Frankenstein? Because I'd love to see those in Spanish. I think those would be fantastic, just to see the differences.
Oh, I'm down.
But I don't think they exist, unfortunately.
I would be completely down to see Senior Wolf.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. El Wolf Mano. All right, so ratings, recommendations.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, you go first.
Well, I was just going to say, I do think if you are a vampire enthusiast, if you're a Dracula enthusiast, if you are a fan of the Lugosi version of this film, then yeah, I think you should see it. If for no other reason than comparison, and I think you'll enjoy it if you're a fan of the original. If, however, you don't like older films, you don't like black and white, you know, there are those people who don't like to watch older movies, then obviously I think you're going to avoid this on your own. So basically, if this is something that would interest you, then yes, I would say watch it.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
No, that makes sense. rental, right, I would say, I guess, for you. You would say rent this?
Yeah.
Okay. Bo?
Yeah, I would say if you're a big fan of the Lugosi Dracula, mm-hmm. it might even be a buy. Otherwise, it's, you know, I didn't personally really enjoy it all that much. I mean, I thought it was historically interesting, and I was interested in it, but I didn't feel like I came away from the experience all that entertained, or, you know, other than just being a horror fan and kind of enjoying it on that level as a historical, unhistorical document. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, like, Boy, I'd be hard-pressed to think I'd ever watch it again, you know? So it would probably, for me, be a pass. But there are those people who love the Lugosi Dracula, and I would say this is a great companion to that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
For me, you know, I did really enjoy it because this is kind of what I grew up watching as a kid, was these old Universal Monster movies. And I'd heard about this one for so long, and I'm kind of glad I watched it now so I had I could really appreciate it better. Historically speaking, yes, it's a very interesting kind of look at the, instead of just dubbing a movie, completely making a different version with this, you know, in another language. So in that respect, I think it was really it was very interesting. I found it entertaining, but then again, I do enjoy classic horror movies like this that are kind of slow and plodding at times. But I just, there were moments in it that were just made me so happy, like some of the matte paintings. I was just like, oh yes, matte paintings, I love you.
Well, and we didn't talk about that, but the set design mm-hmm. of this film is phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, just like the Lugosi film, it's, the atmosphere in the film is tremendous.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Absolutely. I love the scene where he's walking with her down the stairs right before he kills Renfield.
Oh, yeah.
And he's descending the stairs with her in his arms, and you get that wide shot of the staircase. It's very simple. That's a very simple part of the set, but it stuck out to me. Yeah. I think it's beautiful. And all of the, like, where his, anytime we go where his coffin is, like under there.
Oh, right, the catacombs.
I love it. I mean, they really did some amazing work. Yeah. And like anytime you see the carriage, like with, like when they're going to the castle or whatever, it's just, yeah. Sometimes it's hard. When something is this good, it's hard for me to think, oh wow, this really is that old, mm-hmm. you know. And
until you see the string on the bat, and then you're like, ugh,
I'm like,
this
well,
is that old.
That in the infancy of, well, maybe not infancy, I guess it's more like toddler of filmmaking, is
off the bottle, Eaton Gerber, gotcha.
Yeah. That they were able to accomplish what they were, because I mean, you know, looking at where we are now, mm-hmm. then, you know, subtract 80 years intellectually, I know that it's possible and I know that that's what they were doing, but sometimes when I see it, I'm just like, wow.
Yeah, this feels like it was very much ahead of its time. Like I said, with the way the camera moved and stuff like that. So for me, I would say you can watch it on YouTube for free. I know it's available on the Legacy Edition of Dracula. I don't know if it's available on the other more recent DVD version that came out. I don't know if it's on Blu-ray or not, but I would say buy it if you're, well, if you're a collector and a historian, or you're really into classic Universal Monster stuff, I would say buy it. Otherwise, give it a rent or at least watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, it won't hurt you to watch it. Although, they warned, I could not find a copy with subtitles.
Really?
So I had no subtitles.
Oh, shit.
It did not matter because I know the Dracula story so well that it really didn't bother me in the least. I mean, and of course, you know, it did throw me for the different names threw me for about a minute because I was like, Juan. But you know, once you figure out who everyone is, and it's really not difficult if you know the story well. I kind of enjoyed it. It was fun for me to try to figure out, you know, what they were saying. I do know some Spanish, so it was kind of fun. It made it, you know, a little adventurous.
Okay, so we'll be right back to close out the show.
Excuse me, what are you doing? Are you looking for porn again?
No.
Well, what is that I see?
It's not porn. It's the badassboobsandbodycounts.com website. I happen to be looking at the reviews in the boobs section of the site.
They have a section of the site dedicated to boobs?
Yes, they do. They cover exploitation films in the boobs category, action films in the badass category, and horror in the body counts category.
What's that review you're reading now?
This is Andy Sidaris' Malibu Express. See at the bottom of the review there, they list how many boobs appear in the film. In this case, it's 22 pairs. This is definitely a film I want to see.
You mean just for boobs?
Yeah, just for boobs.
What's that other option? BBNBC podcast?
That's the great thing about the site. If you're not into reading the reviews, you can listen to them via the web, on your mobile device, through iTunes, and even Stitcher Smart Radio. And they cover the same types of films. Lesser known action, exploitation, and horror cinema. So yeah, to answer your question, I wasn't cruising porn.
That's too bad.
What's too bad?
That you weren't cruising for porn.
Why?
Because I was feeling kind of horny.
Oh, wait. Get back here. Hey, get back here.
So we got a voicemail from listener Iris, which we're going to play right now.
Hey, guys. It's Iris. I just wanted to personally call you guys, and I just thank you for the well wishes for my son, and I thought that was pretty cool because, you know, I mean, we could walk by each other. Well, maybe not Jenny, but, you know, you guys. I could walk by you guys, and I wouldn't know you that I had... You know, if we were just walking down the street, but you know, I think it's just so awesome how, like, you know, the community has found that, you know, we all care. And I think that's pretty awesome. So anyway, just wanted again to say thank you and that you guys are awesome and I love the show and keep it up. Ciao.
Memories.
Thank you, Iris, for leaving us that voicemail. It was very nice.
Yes, we should also comment on this.
No. Yes, you should.
It sounded like, well, you were kind of abrupt with your ending there. I thought you had more to say.
No, I'm sorry. Voice is going, so.
Right. Just filling in, like, loud noises. But no, I mean, tremendously sweet. Super fan, DTP, super fan, Iris. If you ever do run across a hulking gentleman with a superfluous third nipple on his cheek, that's this guy. But no, that's, you know, the horror community in general, I think, is one of the most friendly. Like, there's a certain stereotype about horror film directors being surprisingly well adjusted and so forth. But I think the same is true of horror fans and this community in general. I really have been blown away by, like, not only just how welcoming everyone's been, because I'm new to the show and whatnot, but just on a personal level, being very, very open and very welcoming. And I think that is more common than not in fans of this genre. So, you know, I appreciate it. And, you know, yeah, we are a community. We all kind of love, we have this thing in common that we really love. And it turns out that most people are actually pretty decent and really awesome. So, yeah. You know, it just brings us together on that level. And the little cracking an egg of knowledge again, y'all.
Well, I thank you, Iris. She's always so incredibly supportive and sweet. I love her so much. And, well, all of our listeners are just fantastic. And yay, Maven's Minions.
Oh, is that a thing? Do you guys have shirts?
They're apparently working on it.
They're working on it. Working on a logo. I think there are villagers. No,
that's not going to turn out well for any of us.
No. our guys are great, and the fact that they take the time to let us know that they're out there again. I know I say that a lot. I do. I run that into the ground. I just want people to know how much I appreciate that. And speaking of that, I got an email about us.
Oh, great.
From a new listener. I have to find it. Chris. I'm not sure if it's Moffy or Moff, but hi, Chris. Anyway, and this is a portion of the email that I got from him. He just says, hi, I just started listening to DTP and have to say you guys are interesting to listen to. Have you guys done a review on the Funhouse? I haven't listened to all of your shows and wasn't sure if you covered that one yet. Keep delivering good horror. And so then I told him, I'm like, no, we've discussed it, but, you know, David's not a fan. But I think we may be doing that sometime in the future.
Yeah.
And we actually have kept in touch, and he's as he's listening more and more to more of the shows, like, he is seriously trying to get caught up, which is awesome. I love that people do that. You know, that blows my mind. And then of course to take the time to let us know they're out there again. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chris. You're a doll. I'm so glad you found us. I was trying to remember how he said he found us, but I don't. Oh, I want to say it was from when I was on Skeleton Crew or something like that. It was from another show. Like, he picked us up from another show.
Okay.
So
also,
that happens too.
If you're in a bus station late at night, I advertise there a lot. It's mostly done in the form of scream song, but you get the message.
Man, I have got to see that in action. I've heard stories, but none of them do it justice. I've got to see this in person.
Made $1.78 last night.
Wow.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, so I will... speaking of Skeleton Crew, I will be joining them sometime in the near future for an upcoming episode. If you guys have suggestions for movies you want us to cover, by all means, write them in. We will do listeners' choice episodes. We did one... couple episodes back for High Tension. If you want this, I know the iTunes feed goes back to a certain point with the old episodes. If you want to get the really old episodes past where the iTunes feed cuts out, you have to go to the blog and actually download them from there, because they are on the server. Speaking of devourthepodcast.blogspot.com, there is a PayPal donate button. So if you want to send money, that's cool. You don't have to, but if you do, that'd be great. Merchandise is in the works. I'm still looking at stuff and trying to figure out how best to do that. So, yeah.
Ooh, we should do a giveaway at some point.
Yeah, we will at some point. I've actually, I think I've got a Scream 4 poster floating around here that I can give away, and I think I might have an extra Carrie poster from the new movie.
I also have a feather duster used in my actual home. If you email Devour the Podcast and the subject line is Stinky Duster, leave your name and address. That's not a good idea. Don't do that. It's a horrible idea. I apologize to everyone.
Well, I'm sure we'll work out some kind of, I was thinking we'd do some kind of prize that goes along with your super secret project, sometime in the future.
Oh yeah. I'll try to collect something that will be awesome for someone to have.
Well, that, or if we can, you know, a copy of the thing and then the thing you actually did your part of it, you know, signed by you, would be kind of cool.
That thing with your signature.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could totally do that. Yeah.
You better be working on something I can have from it. I will hunt your ass down.
So still working on something I can have.
Yeah, if you guys have suggestions for stuff you want us to cover, by all means, email it in or on the Facebook. We will look at that. Doesn't matter if it's for Instant Queue or for feature, we'll take it into account. Next week, we will be doing Lisa and the Devil for our Instant Queue and the Jack Ketchum, Lucky McKee film, The Woman, for our feature. Hopefully my voice will be back to normal and I will no longer be as congested as I am, because that's pissing me off.
You sound kind of sexy.
I do have a final question for the group before we leave. And also a word of warning to David.
Yes.
You understand if this Maven's Minions things, if that really takes hold, then we're one step away from the scene in the mist where they all start chanting expiation.
No, I would never misuse my power. actually, this has been ongoing for quite a while, and yeah, since you have any, since you haven't even noticed, then obviously it's not going to be a problem.
I've noticed. I've been on the Twitterverse seeing it.
That's true. That's true.
It's not healthy. For us. I mean, for Jamie, it's great. Yeah. We do not come out on the winning side of that.
No, but that is absolutely not true. It's just that my name just happens to be an alliteration. That's I lucked out. You know, the only reason I got Minions is because Maven starts with an M. I mean, if it had been, you know, something else.
like Jamie's Jalapenos doesn't work. Same letter, not the same sound. See, Sneaky Spanish.
Very sneaky, sis.
but the question I wanted to pose, in light of us having discussed the Señor Dracula, what do you think is the best interpretation of this story?
Oh, that's a good question.
You mean throughout the years, like of all?
Yeah. From not necessarily Nosferatu. I think that's kind of
its own thing. Yeah. Well, we had Lugosi's Dracula, we had the Spanish Dracula.
Bram Stoker's Dracula
in the 90s.
The Frank Dracula 2000? Does that count? Oh, Frank Langella.
Langella's. Dracula 2000, I wouldn't count because it's its own thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I love the Langella version, I have to say. I also love Bram Stoker's. Bram Stoker's Dracula is one of the sexiest movies ever. It is.
Well, and you... Crazy. You have House of Dracula 2, which was the first Christopher Lee Dracula.
Oh, you're thinking of
Horror of Dracula.
House of Dracula was David Carradine.
Yeah, but Horror of Dracula was...
And that was an interesting one, by the way.
Horror or House?
The David Carradine.
Yes.
That's Dracula, yeah. What was the one with Jack Palance?
That might have been just called Dracula. I don't remember.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
I haven't seen that in years.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I've seen House of Dracula. I'm still not entirely sure how they got Dracula into that, because he was pretty well dead at the end of Dracula, and then they did Son and Daughter, which were both pretty good sequels, spin-off sort of things. But yeah, I remember watching that when I was like, what the hell? How did they get you into this movie? That doesn't make any sense. And then, like, they'd kill him within, like, the first 10 minutes. Which was even weirder.
The titular character is not going to last beyond the first act. Just saying.
Titular. I'm going to say it's a toss-up for me between Bram Stoker's and the Langella version. My favorite Dracula, as in incarnate, is Frank Langella. Definitely. Bo, is it your mom who also really likes that one?
Yeah, she does, but it's mostly because she... is damp for Frank Langella.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking that she and I were like right on board with that one, but
yeah. Oh yeah. No, all I've got to do is give her a copy of some movie that Frank Langella's in for Christmas. And it's like, all right, see you in February.
Oh, apparently, Jack Palance was in a version of Bram Stoker's Dracula titled Bram Stoker's Dracula 1974.
Okay. I have seen it. I did not recall that being the title though. Yeah. Interesting.
Apparently. You know, for me, I don't know. Like, for the longest time, I would have said Lugosi, but Langella did a really good job. And if we're talking about just people who've played Dracula, the character.
Yeah.
There's some really good... We've had good ones. I mean, Lugosi was good. The guy who was in Spanish Dracula was good. Gerard Butler did a good job with it. Gary Oldman was
George
fantastic.
Hamilton. Love at first bite. Woo!
Yeah, and Kate Jackson, is that right?
No, it was who played you mean Love at First Bite?
Yeah.
It was I can't remember her name, but she's got long blondish what the fuck is her name?
Susan St. James.
Yes. Oh. Wow, look at you. Did you look it up?
No.
Also the guy from Monster Squad.
And a little damp myself.
The guy from Monster Squad, I think, did a damn good job as Dracula.
Yes, he was actually. Yeah. Was it you, David, that told me that he made a that talked about on the show one time that the list of There's like a list of top 10 Draculas.
Yeah, I think he made it to, yeah, and he was on a list of like top 10, or it was.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because he was a good one. He was really good.
Yeah, either it was top 10 Draculas, or it was like horror villains or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but yeah. Anyway, yeah, I as far as favorite sort of adaptations, I really like Bram Stoker's Dracula, although it's not really anything like that. I don't think they've ever done a version of the movie that's like the novel at all. That's a good one, though. I do like the Lugosi one, although it's slow as shit and painful to sit through at times. But I would say probably Bram Stoker's or Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula, to clarify that, and Horror of Dracula are probably two of my favorites. Or Dracula, what was it? I really liked, what was it, Satanic Rites of Dracula, or Scarlet?
Oh, sure.
Dracula 1972. I love that one. It's so...
Oh, yeah.
It's wow.
Geez. Oh, man, I love those Christopher Lee Draculas. Anyway. Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, for me, I think the Coppola comes closest. Mm-hmm. And just being, like, a legitimately scary version of Dracula. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Although Keanu Reeves as Jonathan Harker is hard to watch, and I'm not crazy about Winona Ryder in it either,
I'm not either. Actually, the both of them I could just do without,
but it's got the best Renfield in Tom Waits.
Oh, yeah,
it's got it's got the best. Yeah. Oh, when he's leaning out the window, you know, master.
I totally forgot it was Tom Waits.
You give it to the pretty one.
Oh, he's so good.
And we've got Anthony Hopkins as Van Helsing.
Yeah. He's fantastic in it.
Gary Oldman is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, the scene, and it was done practically, the scene where he backs into the shadows and then collapses into the rats. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That's like, that is the Dracula that to me seems simultaneously tragic and terrifying.
Yeah.
So we got kind of a consensus. I think that is probably the best adaptation of that story.
Yeah.
I think it is. And like I said, and then the Langella only, that's really only for Langella though. I mean,
like... Yeah, he is fantastic. I mean, I watched that movie and I was like, this is kind of dull, but then he showed up and was like, okay, damn, he's awesome. Well,
the Mina scene is really good in that one too.
Which one?
The Mina scene where Olivier has to stake Mina.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
Like their version of the Blue Fur Lady is really good. Although the one in Coppola's is really good too, and I think it's kind of partially inspired by what I think of as the Olivier Dracula, and my mother thinks of the movie I watch when everyone else is in bed.
So that's 2 weeks in a row we've done vampire movies.
Yeah, look at us.
Yeah, I know, right? So that is it for episode 40. Thank you guys so much for joining us. It was a lot of fun. I will at some point try to remaster some of those really early episodes, try and clean up the audio on them and re-upload them, but eventually.
Yeah. And big ups to David for coming off an illness, rebounding like some sort of ubermensch and being able to do the show. So thanks, man.
Yeah. No, I was,
that's it. You're a trooper.
I really didn't want to miss episode 40, and I'm so glad I felt better this morning. Like I said, my voice is starting to go, but I should be all right, and I can edit all this tomorrow and get it up in time. So yeah, we will be back next week. Hopefully Bo will be with us. I don't know if it's what's going on with his trip just yet, but we will know. Sometimes.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. Well, we will know as soon as he knows.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Go ahead. Let's go ahead and say your goodbyes, everybody.
All right. Thanks again, everyone, for listening one more time. And yay for us for episode 40. Yay for Bo for episode 10 with us. Can you believe it's already been that long? I'm so excited. Yeah. I guess that's it. Thanks, everyone, for being out there. We love you. Have a good week.
Yeah, thanks to all the Twitter people and all the Facebook people, and even the people who fervently disagree with me almost enjoy that more than the people who me. So by all means, keep it up. And big thank yous, and keep listening, because if you don't, then we'll stop getting together and having this much fun all the time.
Yeah, so all right, thank you guys.
Bo just likes to say, you're wrong, sir.
A lot of people are. That's not my fault.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye, everybody.
Listen, I gotta tell you, Jerry, we're not gonna invite you up anymore if you keep going on like this. Sorry about your army.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can reach us by email at CenobiteDave, that's CenobiteDave, at gmail.com, or Maven1974 at gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at D Delamorte, DDELLAMORTE, or Maven1974. To visit the site, go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. And now you can leave a message on our fancy new voicemail at 760-661-7280.